You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, October 17th, 2025. Another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, watching us on Facebook or YouTube, catching us by podcast. I appreciate you wrapping up your work week right here. I got a question for you and for producer Parker Olson down there in Madison Studio A2. Here's the question. Do you remember the 2004 Red Sox? Of course you do. Of course you remember. It was the greatest league championship series ever. The Boston Red Sox spot the Yankees a 3-0 lead and then come roaring back in game four. And then they win game five, and then they improbably win game six. And in game seven, they complete it. They're down 3-0. They come all the way back and take the series against the Yankees 4-3 to go to the World Series. It was the first time that a team who was ever down 3-0 in the league championship series and came back and won the next four games to win it all. And do you know how many times it's happened since then, Parker?
I'm going to guess zero.
Zero. The number is zero. But there's always that chance. It starts somewhere. And so we're channeling the Sox from 2004 going into tonight's game four, Brewers against the Dodgers. How is that for starting your day with some optimism? Not just given you some hope?
It's way more optimistic than I am, I'll tell you that.
Well, mine might be a little manufactured. Eh. However, I will say, and I've told the story before, I do very clearly remember that 2004 series. I was away on a work trip, so you'd have to go down to the little hotel bar for dinner after every day's classes. And, you know, the first time was game four. We thought, here comes the Yankees in a sweep, and Boston won. And then the next night, and then a travel day, and then the next night, and the next night. Each time, the crowd in the hotel bar would get a little bit bigger because everybody wanted to see the Yankees lose, of course. And it was great. It was electric. I've never forgotten it. But that's only happened once in 41 instances. The other 40 times, the team that was down 3-0 did not have that kind of crazy comeback. But there's going to be a second at some point. Why can't it be the Brewers 2025?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, let's start with the hitters, right?
The hitting has been so... Pat, it is so incredibly frustrating to watch because the arms have given us such a good chance.
Oh my goodness. And so good.
The batting is so poor that I don't even feel like we have a chance.
Well, I mean,
do you know how bad you have to be in one facet to the game to completely wipe out an entirely amazing aspect of your game?
Yes. Yeah. And we're seeing it. It's a nightmare come to life. In fact, I've got a great stat about that here someplace. Oh yeah. Franchise history. Okay. In the past five games, which goes back to game three of the division series. Mm-hmm. So in the past five games for the Brewers, they have just 18 hits. That is the fewest amount of hits in any five game stretch in team history.
Yeah.
I mean, what a way to make history. The most wins in team history to get here, the fewest amount of hits in any five game stretch to throw it all away. And that's what we're dealing with. You've got, I mean, Christian Yelich, whether you like it or not, you're the franchise player. So you're the poster child. Well, everybody else has slumpy numbers, but we're going to highlight his 1-for-11 with 6 strikeouts in this series.
Yelich couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat right now.
That's exactly the thing. Meanwhile, the guy that you worried about, Jacob Mizrowski, has figured it out. 3 postseason outings. He's pitched 12 innings. He's allowed only 7 hits, 3 walks while striking out 16, including 9 in last night's game. That's a team record for a rookie in the playoffs. Yeah. And he retired 11 Dodgers in a row at one point while it was still a 1-1 game. But when you don't get run support, what can you do?
It's credit to Mizrowski, because I didn't even want him on the roster. So a lot of credit to him. It's cool that Miz, being a rookie, is absolutely killing it in pitching. Yeah. And it's cool that Caleb Durbin, actually. I think Caleb Durbin is probably our best player right now offensively.
Yeah, I mean, he's really got a lot of grit. He really does. But then we've got some other pitchers that, I mean, Aaron Ashby, he just never inspires confidence. And so he starts the game giving up a triple and then a double to start the Dodgers scoring. You know, Mizorowski has to come in after just 2/3 of an inning. But truly, it was the Brewers batters becoming mysteriously incapable of making small ball contact. The same contact that helped them beat the Dodgers all 6 times in the regular season, though Roger is quick to point out on Facebook that back in July, the Brewers swept the Dodgers, but the Brewers were on a wave while the Dodgers at the time had a number of key injuries. Now it's the Brewers who are hurting. The Dodgers are at almost full strength. What a difference 3 months makes.
Yes. Yeah. And we're still making contact.
Oh,
but it's just we're hitting leather finders is the problem.
Yeah, right. Tony is up on YouTube early this morning saying Cleveland had amazing pitching, but the lowest batting average in playoff history. It's really hard to overcome not scoring runs. Yes, that is the object, is to score more runs than the other team does. But
that's what I hear.
But again, I'm holding out hope. And so Tony goes on to say, between this and you thinking Wisconsin's going to upset Ohio State, you're going to have a rough weekend, Pat.
Oh, God.
Yes, it could be, but Somebody here has got to be Mr. Glass half full. I'm not telling you what it's half full of at this early hour, but I'm half full of something.
One of my buddies texted and said, I kind of hope we just get swept so that this doesn't just keep in consuming my life.
Well, that part is true, because again, the series would come back for a game 6, you know, but to do that, we're going to have to win tonight and again tomorrow. So That's a tall order. And I mean, it is really, I hate to say it, it is grudgingly impressive to watch how the Dodgers are hitting on all cylinders. And yeah, you got a $500 million payroll. You better be hitting on all cylinders, but they are. And when they are, it's, you know, it's something to see. I mean, they're doing something that hasn't been done for quite a while. No defending champion, and they are the defending champions, no defending champion has even reached the World Series since the 2009 Philadelphia Phillies.
Really?
And no team has won consecutive World Series since the Yankees took 3 in a row in 98, 99, and 2000 before Mr. Olson was a glean in Mr. and Mrs. Olson's eyes.
This is true.
Goes back a ways. So the game tonight, which could be it, or it could be a reason to keep hope alive. Pre-game coverage begins at 7 o'clock on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network, with the first pitch at 7:38. And again, there will be a game tomorrow if the Brewers win. And if they win that game too, then back to American Family Field on Monday. And if it's 2004 all over again, game 7 will be on Tuesday at American Family Field. One can dream.
A lot of ifs.
Dreams are free, Parker. Dreams are free. We got that going for us.
Okay.
Let's get to the other part of that equation of this most amazing weekend in sports. When you look back at this weekend and say, this was an incredible weekend, it'll also be because the Wisconsin Badgers somehow beat Ohio State, the number one team in the country, in a football game. And coverage on that game begins at 12:30 tomorrow on several Civic Media stations. And the kickoff, I believe, is 2:30, if I'm not mistaken. But 12:30 is when the pregame begins on your favorite Civic Media station. And you're going to be looking back at this weekend and going, I cannot believe what the Brewers did. I cannot believe what the Badgers did to Ohio State. And then you wrap up the weekend with the Packers taking on the Arizona Cardinals. Coverage begins Sunday afternoon at 1:00. On several Civic Media stations with a kickoff at 3:25. What an amazing weekend this could be. Could. Emphasis
could.
On could. Boy, the word could is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Yes, sir. It might be the biggest could I've ever seen.
Again, there's a reason for the Roy Kent coffee mug on Fridays. There's just some things we only Roy can say as far as what our odds look like this weekend.
Yeah, it's you know, this is the most Wisconsin sports thing that I can think of.
Now, again, we are a radio show, but we are in social media. And so Tony Adds clearly watching on YouTube. The look on Parker's face to Pat's unbridled optimism is priceless. Probably because he knows I don't buy it either, but somebody's got to say it. Somebody's got to say it's possible. And that's where we are.
Yeah.
We have to deal in the realm of the possible.
Okay.
Because otherwise it's all fantasy and or it's all woe is me. And we're not going to do that today. We're not in the pity pool today, kids.
Oh,
maybe Monday, because the Badgers might be the first to lose by triple digits in a long, long time. And the Brewers could get embarrassed, and the Packers could I can't even think of the radio friendly euphemism here. No. But they could do something. And Monday morning could be, you know, just as morose as can be.
I don't ask for pity. I will just wallow.
There may be wallowing. I totally understand that. But I would love to hear, see, or read some attempts at either optimism from folks or change the subject entirely for something new and good. Let's see what Jim says on the text from Brookfield. I'm not pre-reading this, so here we go. While the 2004 Red Sox provide a glimmer of hope, the bottom line is that the second season, the playoffs, always belong to the team who is healthy, happy, and peaking at the right time. Unfortunately, the Brewers are not any of the above.
Having
Jim
the first
is
half.
Officially morose. He's welcome to the pity pool, buddy. It's here. There's plenty of room in the deep end. Come on in. The water's just, well, it's not even water.
It's beer. It's so much beer.
This would be a good chance for me to say, yes, again, we would love to have your input on things today at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or you can put a text on the Civic Media app. You can use the voice note feature of the Civic Media app. You can put comments on the YouTube or Facebook pages where we stream this fine radio show, the Up North News Facebook and YouTube pages, the Civic Media YouTube and Facebook pages. I am relatively certain that we're going to have some good stuff to talk about in terms of local pizza joints. I haven't seen the daily newsletter yet that Ellie puts together for Up North News, but I know that she was on Fridays asking people to send in for their top Wisconsin pizza places. And let's see what we got. Oh, yep. Look, that's a beautiful looking piece of pizza. She gives shout outs from our readers to Joe's Fox Hut in Fond du Lac, says best thin crust pizza with a tangy sauce. Tony and Maria's in Janesville, fresh ingredients and so much cheese, says Patty. Wisco's in Eau Claire, Dina Mia in Rhinelander, Harry's Prohibition Bistro in Sheboygan, Brick's Neapolitan Pizza in Hudson, and Harry's Pizza e Vino in Elkhart Lake are some of the local pizza joints that people sent in by reading our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. You can get in the game. Send us some of your favorite local pizza places, and maybe somebody will be trying something new based on the results of that. All right, well, as you can imagine, it's a Friday, and we have all the best recurring characters coming in. Kia Vakil is coming up next, along with Billy Ball, my Courier newsroom partner from North Carolina, our regular review panel with Jim Santel and Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze. We've got Kristen Lyerly is off, so we'll talk to State Senator Jeff Smith, and we'll have Mike Clemens with sports. All that and more ahead on a busy Friday morning. I'm Pat Kreitel. You're up north. Oh, and Greg Bach, too.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. It is 6:22 now on this Friday morning. And as always, we're talking with Courier Newsroom's national political editor, Kia Vakil, and joined this week by senior editor of the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, Billy Ball. Billy, Kia, good morning.
Hey there.
Nice to see you both. Unfortunately, it's not for the best of topics. We would be talking to Kia anyway about the way that the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments this week that could lead to the further gutting or perhaps just the inevitable death, it feels like, of the Voting Rights Act. But piggybacked onto that are recent developments in Billy State, North Carolina, where the Cardinal and Pine is the Courier Newsroom sister publication there. And the headline there this week is that North Carolina Republicans, at Donald Trump's behest, are gerrymandering North Carolina again. Billy, A, what are they doing or thinking they want to do? And B, can they get away with it?
Oh, absolutely they can get away with it. They've gotten away with it numerous times in the last 15 years or so. So I don't find that far-fetched at all. But a little bit of background on this is that a few weeks ago we started getting rumors that that Phil Berger, who is, you know, for all intents and purposes, probably the most powerful lawmaker in North Carolina. He's the Senate president, a Republican. He's also in a primary to stay in the legislature. There were rumors that he was seeking an endorsement from Trump in his primary, and Trump, in exchange, wanted him to gerrymander North Carolina a little bit more.
For clarification, we were pre-recording this, and that's where we lost Billy. But I think Kia, since he did such a good job setting it up, we just want to carry on, and maybe Billy can rejoin us again. We'll see. But I mean, the key phrase there was Donald Trump's endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, look, Donald Trump has taken over the Republican Party. It is a cult of personality. We know this. He does, unfortunately, carry a lot of sway with his endorsements. And, you know, Phil Berger, who is the Republican Senate Majority Leader in North Carolina, you know, he's been in office for quite a while, and he has a primary challenger to his right. And so he wants Trump's endorsement to fend off that challenger. And in exchange, he's going to gerrymander the maps in North Carolina to give Republicans an extra seat there in what is basically, like, you know, a 52-48 state. They're going to have 11 of 14 seats.
And it is the inevitable fate of something that started with what was partially a Wisconsin case like a decade ago, it feels like now, when now retired Justice Anthony Kennedy made the bold claim that essentially there can't be such thing as a political or a partisan gerrymander that is illegal, and that essentially it was, you know, the trust factor. We were mutually assured destruction. The parties would behave, because if they do it, then the other guys are going to do it someday. And Trump's Republican Party is like, no, if it's not illegal to do a partisan gerrymander, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, it turns out you need guardrails for democracy. You know, we've seen those guardrails fall away one by one over the last 15 years, whether it's Citizens United, whether it's the various rulings weakening the Voting Rights Act.
What is, as best you can tell, is the legal argument that there's supposed to be a statute of limitations on the Voting Rights Act because of the terrible things that happened in the decades earlier, but that, you know, now they don't apply to the terrible things that are happening now?
Yeah, that seems to be Brett Kavanaugh's belief that, you know, these sorts of, you know, considering race and the history of racism and poll taxes and everything in the U.S., under the Voting Rights Act, considering that as a factor, should only be permitted for a short period of time. Unclear what that is. But this very much goes back to the similar ruling about a decade ago when John Roberts struck down key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, you know, more or less saying that times have changed and we don't need this.
I think we've got Billy Ball back from North Carolina, so let's bring him into this as well. And Billy, one of the things we were talking about, there've got to be a fair number of Republican folks out there that, you know, still have a moral compass to say this ain't right.
If they can squeeze out, per Trump's request, if they can squeeze out one more seat, which looks like they're trying to do, is move it to 11. That's the goal. And frankly, it's kind of difficult to see, because it seems as if North Carolina is as gerrymandered as it could possibly be. So in some fashion, they're going to have to make some of their Republican districts, their solid Republican districts, a little more competitive in order to do this. So it's a strange situation, but they likely are intending to get at least another seat up.
So, Kia, let's wrap up with this from a California perspective. We know that voters are going to be asked to change the maps to basically add 5 Democratic seats to offset the 5 in Texas. And yet now all of these other Republican states are starting to act as well. Do you think that that leads California voters to be more skeptical of this, or that in the end they're going to say, well, we're going to do our part to try to protect democracy?
Yeah, no, I think it's going to pass. We're going to pass it quite handily. I think California voters will probably, you know, that will probably increase the urgency of passing this. You know, we are a 60-40 state, and even if it doesn't pass by that margin, I would be very surprised if it doesn't pass. Obviously, there's a lot of money being spent on both sides, and awareness isn't necessarily that high, but, you know, the most aware part of the electorate are the liberal base. And so I do think the odds of it passing are quite good. It's just, you know, as other states do it, the effects of us, California, pushing back are going to obviously be minimized in the long run.
Kia Vakil is the national political editor for Courier Newsroom, and Billy Ball is senior editor at the Cardinal and Pine from Courier Newsroom at cardinalpine.com, a name I will always be jealous of because we have pines here, we have cardinals here, but Billy went and got it first. So
they belong to us, Pat.
What are you going to do? Billy, thank you so much. Kia, thanks. Have a good start to the weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
Coming up next, Greg Bach drops by, and I'll tell him don't go changing to try and please me as we take care of today's history lesson with an emphasis on us nerding out over the Billy Joel documentary. That and much more ahead on a Friday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. All right, in today's history lesson, let's start with this week in 1989 when Billy Joel released the album Stormfront with some enduring hits such as that one, I Go to Extremes, Shameless, which was later made popular by Garth Brooks, and We Didn't Start the Fire, all part of Stormfront, released this day in 1989. You know what? Let's just park the rest of this. The rest of the history, if we get to it, we get to it, but you know what? Greg Bach is here now, and Greg Bach and I, we have completely nerded out on the Billy Joel documentary on HBO Max. Can you affirm that for us, Mr. Bach? Good morning.
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Parker. And I can confirm and not deny that I watched both parts in a row thinking to myself, all right, you know, I'll watch like an hour because I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
And then I watched the whole first half. I'm like, I'll just start the second half. And then it was like dark outside. I said, well, that was a day I could have done stuff. But hey, no. I've learned.
Yeah, you've learned that that was a very compelling documentary that will eat up 4 hours and 50 minutes. And if you have any appreciation for Billy Joel, you will enjoy all 4 hours and 50 minutes of it. As we did. I mean, just there's the personal story, of course, with the father who really got him into classical music, but then abandoned him at the age of 8. He was never quite the same after the war. He had witnessed so many atrocities and things, and he just up and left. And Billy Joel's mom had some issues as well. So he just buried himself in his music. And we're just here to talk about just the songwriting, the lyrics that were based on all kinds of real life experiences. And Greg, here's where I really get into trouble. All right. Okay. The Beatles were the great. Beatles were the best. Okay. Beatles did a lot of She Loves You. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they really captured the overall essence of feelings and the human experience. Billy Joel, on the other hand, was like, here's my personal experience and I'm going to write a song about it.
Absolutely. His was my favorite kind of song. It still is. When you listen to like the Eagles or Steely Dan or Billy Joel, the personal touches, but also the snarky, sarcastic nature of lyrics.
Yep.
And the thing I always think about is that is early in his career, he, you know, he's got management, he's got a buzz, people are talking, and he goes to LA and he hates LA, so he writes a song making fun of LA and they're like, get out. And he's like, yeah, I sabotaged it. I don't know what I was doing, but that's what I did. I'm like, okay.
just what it does. Now, would he raise from experience? I mean, it all starts with this one first early hit when he wrote Just the Way You Are.
Yes. Oh.
That's your cue, Parker.
He's too into this song
now. He's like, I'm loving I Go to Extremes. I'm just going to play all of this.
I was very interested in that one. I'm not going to lie.
So much of this song and so many others are about the woman who would become his first wife, Elizabeth. And that's a story in and of itself. And that one I don't want to do a spoiler alert on how they met and how they came to be together. It was complex.
Well, and also it's a beautiful story too, that, like, honestly, I think regardless of their status still endures. Like, they're still like,
oh yeah,
it wasn't the stereotypical, you know, messy, disgusting divorce, and now everyone hates each other. There's something there, and it's a beautiful story between just the two of them. And this song is great because when you hear it, that opening organ chord, those notes, it almost like you're like, oh, this song is good. And also, there's a very 70s aspect to this song. There's very mid to late 70s feel about this tune. I love it.
He could really write to the times, and some of it was about Elizabeth, and some of it was about the other things that he was going through with his life, like having to, again, because he signed a bad record deal, his first one, to get out of it, he had to play anonymously, and that's where we get this next song, Piano Man, coming from. It's at that point the crowd goes wild, and you know, you can't hear anything the rest of the song because the crowd just singing.
And I would venture, you know, in the annals of songs sung by the audience, I think this outdoes Sweet Caroline. They always do the chorus. That's great.
Yeah.
But this song, I've watched videos of entire audiences singing the entire song.
Yes, because you can, even if you don't play the instrument, you can relate to him trying to grind out a living and the people that he's meeting. And yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and what I loved is that in this documentary, like, you get to know the characters in the song. You've always known their names and what they do, but he fleshes them out even further. So you get to, like, experience who they are in his life personally.
Around that same time, you mentioned, as you said, Say Goodbye to Hollywood and The Entertainer, two songs which really summed up his feelings about people who criticized him or who'd done him wrong. He had kind of a darker phase at times with songs like The Stranger and with songs like Big Shot. Let's play that one next.
Oh.
And I love that he was so honest that not only is he still writing the songs about personal experiences, like this one is about his waning days with Elizabeth, but he said, I purposefully wrote the songs for glass houses to be big and loud because I love performing those on stage. So, you know, why doesn't he do Just the Way You Are, the nice little melodies? Because he's now played on stage and realizes you need big songs for a big audience, and glass houses is full of them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And by the way, in between
those lyrics, just like, oh.
Tom Perignon in your hand and a spoon up your nose. Yes. But at that point, because he went from, the 52nd Street album, which had a very New York City vibe, to Glass Houses, which was loud and brash, he was really getting trashed by the critics because the critics wanted to pigeonhole him, and he refused to be pigeonholed.
Yeah.
So then that takes us to the Nylon Curtain album, where he really started to comment more on society, where you've got songs like Pressure, you got Allentown, which is usually the one you would play for Nylon Curtain, where he's really commenting on society. Yeah. But I would rather highlight Goodnight Saigon, where he was talking to friends of his who served in Vietnam. They wanted a song about it. He said, I've never served. They said, listen to us tell our stories. The song that he wrote, this one right here, is probably the one you most likely at home haven't heard. and you need to hear it.
Yes.
On Paris Island, we left as inmates from an asylum.
But then, in a massive pivot, Billy Joel got away from the music business for a bit. He went down to St. Bart's in the Caribbean and was just, you know, kicking it around. He was playing piano in a bar just for fun when in walks Christy Brinkley.
Yeah.
I'm, as happens to all of us at some point, right? You know, a supermodel comes walking into your life. Next thing you know, he's writing the Innocent Man album with a whole different genre of music, including one specifically written and a video starring Christy Brinkley.
Even Parker knows that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Parker, like, you know, I mean, I know you've heard of Billy Joel. Of course you have. You've heard the songs. But he was one of those artists back in the early to mid 80s who was so big. He was everywhere. He was touring everywhere. He was on every radio station all the time. You could not, honestly, if you didn't like Billy Joel, it was a sad time for you because that you couldn't get away from him.
Because it was, yeah, it was. But chances are you did, because you may not have liked everything, but there was something in all of that writing that resonated with you. One more I want to highlight from that album. So many off Innocent Men, but Leave a Tender Moment Alone. I mean, just for the harmonica playing, if nothing else, but the lyrics and everything else. Well, anyway, that's when, about this time, Billy Joel finds out that he made another bad deal by making his ex-wife's brother his manager.
Womp, womp.
$1 million embezzled later. God. And Christy Brinkley was actually the first one to kind of notice, like, Billy, where's the money? Where's it going? Yeah. And they figured out they can't get it back. The only thing to do is to get back out on the road. And he did. I mean, he did Baby Grand. He did. And then everything else that led to Stormfront and the song that we were playing before. But his drinking was getting in the way as well.
Yeah.
And Elton John, by the way, the cameos in here, besides Elton John, I mean, so many people that you know by one name: Sting, Bruce, Pink, Garth, Nas, Sir Paul. Okay, that was two, but you know what I mean. And Elton John saying, your drinking is getting in the way of things.
Yeah,
when Elton John...
the man who invested early in Cocaine Inc. When Elton John tells you you have a problem, you might need to look at yourself in the mirror. Yeah, I mean, and that relationship... I remember as a kid being like wait, Billy Joel is marrying Christy Brinkley. Wait, do I have a shot?
With we all learned.
No,
we could. But, we could, but don't but let that drinking get in the way. Yeah.
But one that with that when they're talking to her, like, it's another one of those things where it's the dissolution of that relationship is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
And yet, when you can get all four of your ex-wives to be part of a documentary and all of them express ongoing admiration for him and he for them.
Yeah.
You know that there was a pretty good heart there on the inside.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he does no more writing at that point. He's like, I am tapped out. He describes it as some kind of a beautiful torture, something like that. And he hasn't written pop songs since. But you know what? For that time that he put things out, again, much like the Beatles, pretty good run. You know. Well,
and I'll say one last thing about it too is that, you know, you can say you respect him as a songwriter, you can respect him as a player, you can respect him, like, and there's no way you can get away from how great he is. But the thing that I actually have the most admiration for is the fact that after his pop career, he started writing classical music, writing it, like, notation-wise, writing the actual music. And he said to himself, I don't have the talent to play this. Billy Joel said that. I don't have the talent to play this. I'll find the kind of humility you have to have in a world where you are Billy Joel to say, no, I don't have the chops. I'll get the guy who can.
And I can write it, but somebody else can play this better than me. And he found that person.
Oh my goodness. I didn't know he had done that. I thought he played it. I didn't realize he didn't play it. And when he says, yeah, I can't do this, I'm like, what musician of his level actually has that kind of inner monologue of critique?
I will say, not to the same degree when we talk about the Beatles, but to know to bring in Billy Preston was a pretty good deal. By the way, I skipped a step before he completely tapped out of writing. River of Dreams was the last thing that came out. We'll play a little bit of that as we start to wrap things up. Then came all the Madison Square Garden shows. No new material. You don't need new material.
No.
You got a pretty good set list to work. That three-ring binder that he has on the piano is pretty thick, you know?
Yeah.
And now he's just trying to be a good dad, like he said. He had young kids really late in life. I get really tired just thinking about it. But he's doing it, you know? And good on him.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was our Billy Joel appreciation segment, so that we get it all out of our system in one fell swoop rather than continuing to torture you with it in drips and drabs. We're done now. Like Billy Joel, we're tapped out. We'll never talk about him again. Some of you will have a local news break. Others will come back and we'll yammer about some of the other stuff that actually happened on this day in history. You can listen on the Civic Media app, Facebook or YouTube, and then we'll catch you after the 7 o'clock news across the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. Somebody stole. Somebody stole. I don't know why I'm walking at night, but now I'm tired and I don't want to walk anymore. Home and rest in the rest of my life. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. You can dance. Every dance with the guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. You can smile. Okay, now it's time for the rest of today's history lesson. It all started with Billy Joel in 1989, releasing Stormfront. But let's go back to 1960, and the Drifters had Save the Last Dance for Me as the number one hit for the first of 3 weeks at number one. Greg Bach continues on with us now, along with Parker Olson, as we go through the rest of today's history lesson. On this day in 1973, OPEC imposed an oil embargo against countries they deemed to have helped Israel in the Yom Kippur War. The Arab oil embargo of 1973 was, I mean, one of those lightning bolt moments in history. And it really should have been our wake-up call to, like, go all in on alternative fuels and other things like that. It's taken us 50 plus years just to get to this point with a president who's trying to dismantle that progress when we actually should have been so much farther along by now.
Oh, absolutely. Bridget and I were having that discussion this past weekend that it will take another how many decades even to give ourselves some sort of infrastructure that will give us real alternative energy.
Yeah. And I mean, we will get there. It's just that it would have been less expensive to do it, you know, right away instead of dragging it out year after year after year. All right, back to 1964 now, and Manfred Mann had the number one song. There she was, just walking down the street singing. I'm not saying that this song wouldn't have had staying power were it not for the movie, but sometimes you can look at something like the movie Stripes and go, yeah, that movie is a forever classic now because of that movie.
I'd say the same thing for maybe Shout and Animal House that like brought back into the zeitgeist. And this song is silly. This is silly. This is a silly song.
I know the song from Full House, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Full House. That's weird. That show is like as old as I am.
They've got reruns.
Yeah, it's true.
I was watching Full House as a kid.
Interesting.
Okay. Interesting. All right, we'll explore that further, the Olsen twins. No. The late George Wendt, it's sad to say that. He passed away back in May. He was born this day in 1948, 77 years ago. Wyclef Jean is 56 today. Chris Kirkpatrick is 54. Do we know Chris Kirkpatrick?
Of course we know Chris Kirkpatrick.
Here I go again, questioning your boy band credibility. But no, you got the creds. You got Chris Kirkpatrick of NSYNC is 54 today. And Eminem is 53. Eminem is 53, boys and girls.
That broke Greg.
Apparently Eminem has a new song out targeting Donald Trump. I haven't heard the whole thing, and I had to be convinced that's real because, again, AI,
it is.
But yeah, if it is, I'm I'm going to listen to that more and, you know, see if there's maybe 5 seconds that we can play on the radio. No?
You should watch his freestyle, too, that he did about Donald Trump in a parking lot. It is amazing. It's really good. He
probably
hates
can't
that
play
man.
That on the radio.
He hates no. Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. So happy birthday to Eminem. 53 today. The number one song this week in 1970 was by the Jackson 5.
God, I think I had to sing this in middle school.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Oh, it just dawned on me.
And of course, it was the Mariah Carey version. But yeah. Still, now you get to know that there was an original, and it was by the Jackson 5. Let's see. Let's move on to 1987. Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam had the number one song. That is 19. 19-
oh wait, yep. I'm sorry, I skipped. There you
yes,
go.
Yes, you did.
So
it's so fun doing this with a young fella. It really
Lisa
is.
Lisa and Cult Jam with yep. featuring Full Force. That was the whole thing.
Yep.
They have a biopic on Lifetime.
Seriously?
I think it's supposed to be kind of a jokey thing, or not super serious. But yeah, I want to watch it.
Well, clearly you've proven you will invest in a good music documentary.
Absolutely. So, oh, my goodness.
Go for that. Let's see. Jim Seals of Seals and Crofts was born this day in 1941, passed away 3 years ago. Country legend Alan Jackson is 67 years old. I remember when he was, you know, brand new on the scene, and I didn't know if he was going to go places because he didn't, like, do anything other than just stand there and sing. Nah, but it turns out if you just stand there and sing and you're really good, you'll still do all right.
That's the George Strait school of thought. It's just like stand there, sing a good song, and let the people come to you. And I love Alan Jackson. Good gravy.
Yes. Big fans here. Gary Puckett of the Union Gap.
Watch your mouth.
I know. Gary Puckett, no relation to Kirby, is 83 years old today, a native of Hibbing, Minnesota, just like our friend Robert Zimmerman, a.k.a.
Yes.
Bob Dylan. And, hey, spoiler alert, you're never going to believe what the number one song was this week in 1998 by Bare Naked Lady. Well, you probably know, but listen anyway. Oh, there it is, yeah.
Don't worry, right. Parker, that was called a tease, what you did before. That was a tease.
is that a tease?
Yep. Yes. Loud Shirt Day is on Parker's list here on the National Day calendar. I feel targeted. Were you coming after my plaid?
I would not qualify your flannels as wow.
Okay.
I qualify as this comfy.
Yeah.
It's extremely comfy.
It's very Midwestern.
We're definitely getting to that time of day. Let's see. Parker, you've also listed National Pasta Day.
Yes.
So here we go. We're going to rank all the pastas in order of which is the worst to best. Go. No, wait. We don't have enough time for that. So, Parker, favorite pasta?
Oh, God. Tortellini.
Oh, that's a solid choice. That is really solid. I'm going to go with Mastacioli because that's good old-fashioned comfort food there. And, Greg, do you have a favorite pasta?
I do, and I just don't know the name of it because I just heard bucatini.
Oh, bucatini. Very
That's
nice.
Very filling. Right. Very okay. filling.
Great. Hey, congratulations again on the new home for the Laughing Tap. Can't wait
Thank
to learn
you.
More about that. And
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, buddy.
All right. Our Week in Review panel is coming up, and then State Senator Jeff Smith right after 8 o'clock running against another incumbent senator because of redistricting. I'm Pat Quitelow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.